You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania, just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike Exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn-find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall President and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
You know, we were just talking about the casino right across the street from us. And we just said, when people are leaving here, we got to tell them that, you know, Vegas is less than 2 minutes from here. That'll be their new tagline.
Yeah.
You can be there in 2 minutes. That's the problem. It's so close and it's right here. And it's like, you know, you went from Morgantown, nothing to do, literally nothing to do. I guess the public library, you could go there, which it seems public libraries seem to be, must have a tough time now with the internet.
But they're coming back in a lot of cities.
That's good. They should be. I think it's important. One of the, my most fun times growing up in East Tennessee was the the Lawson McGee Library in downtown Knoxville. And you could go there and, I mean, you could go down rabbit holes like, you know me, I love to go down rabbit holes. And so it was amazing the stuff that you could learn about businesses and cars and stuff that wasn't readily out there. You know, you could say, I had a buddy of mine that I met one time and said his family, you know, was the founders of IHOP, and you had no way to prove it or disprove it.
Right.
So they were like, golly, that's cool.
And then they started renting VHS tapes and then DVDs. Wow.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to Blockbuster anymore.
How cool is this? So yeah, it's got to be interesting. It's nice that they're making a comeback. So show number 146, here we are. We've had some great guests on, and we have another great guest today we'll get to here in just a minute. But where do we sell cars to? Hey, how about the past week, 23 cars we sold.
Wow.
Cha-ching. How about Canton, Georgia, Dexter, New York, East Rochester, New York, Scranton, Pennsylvania, Birdsboro, Pennsylvania, Madison, Indiana, Newtown, Pennsylvania, Terre Haute, Indiana, got that right,
yep.
Greencastle, Pennsylvania, Orrville, Ohio, Dumas, Arkansas.
Almost said it, didn't you?
Pipe Creek, Texas, Pennsburg, Pennsylvania, Sylvan Lake, Michigan, Miami Beach, Florida, West Deptford, that's a tough one, New Jersey, Sheikleyville, Pennsylvania, Beach City, Texas, Cuyamalpa, Mexico.
Wow.
Yeah, guy bought a Harley from us from Mexico. Chester, New Jersey, Eagle, Colorado, and Hebron, Maryland.
Okay, there's a Hebron, Indiana. I don't know. And there's Hebron also. Oh,
there's all of those things. So, you know, thank you. Yeah. You know, we can never predict where cars will be sold next. And it's funny because when you go through the list, when I see the individual sales come over my desk, I don't think about much about, oh, that one went to Texas and that one went to California. But the most cars that we sell, obviously, are to Pennsylvania. But the second biggest state for us to sell cars is California.
Wow.
And then Texas and then Florida. So, and you'd think if you were in California that you might be able to find a 65 whatever closer, but apparently not. Apparently you need to.
Not the right one.
Or not the right one. Because these are all one of one in so many instances. The cars that we have in inventory, you could narrow them down to one of one if you figured out all the different things that have happened as they've been restored or amateur restoration or upgraded brakes or wheels or tires or whatever. And so, you know, hard to find another one necessarily. And if you're real specific, because, you know, grandpa had one, dad had one, whatever, and you want one that's an exact color, an exact transmission, exact engine, might be difficult to find, even in car crazy California.
Yeah, so. I knew a used car guy that said, you've got the only one. New car dealers have, they all have the same one. You've got the only one with that miles, that color, that amount of either dings or no dings or whatever it might be.
How'd you like to be a dealership and have 57 Toyota white Camrys? Mm-hmm. How'd you even keep up with one was missing?
Yeah. Believe me, I did that for a while. Yeah. It's not easy.
Yeah, wait a minute. Is there 57 or 56 out there?
Yellow
right
neons. Oh my God.
Neons. Well, those cars don't have much of a shelf life. Yeah. I don't see many of those on the road. You see them in autocross, though.
Yeah.
You know, the SCCA stuff, a lot of people drive neons. And I think they're just an inexpensive car that you can modify, and it's kind of a nice base starting price of of cheap, if you will. And I don't mean cheap in cheap terms, but it's a way to get in the hobby, and you can do some modifications to the cars. And there's lots of little mods you can do to a Neon. So yeah, well, and nothing wrong with that. We don't look down our nose at Neons.
The most fun is to spend other people's money. And I went to, when I was the used car manager for a big dealership in Philadelphia, I spent $175,000. I bought 10 Neons. And a Viper.
And a Viper.
How is that for the spectrum?
I like it. How many Neons could you get for the, it's the math you don't want to know. We have a wonderful special guest in the studio with us today. It's nice to have somebody here with us. Normally we have people either on Zoom or on telephone, or they're across the country and we're making them get up at crack of dawn, but absolutely didn't have to do that today. Joe Ligo is here with us, the documentary producer and what else is your title? Director also, aren't you?
Sure, that works.
Joe Ligo, AMC documentary producer, the last independent automaker, which was AMC, right?
Yes. Yeah, thank you for having me. This is great.
Yeah, great to have you. And we've been talking for a while. You and I met about a year or so ago and had talked about this project. And, of course, you got to understand that I hear about daily somebody's got some this or that or other, and you know 99% of them turn out to not be, you know, more pie in the sky. Oh, we're going to try to do this. You have really followed through this to the point. This is full time for you, right?
Yeah, yeah. This is a full time job, and the goal is to have the series. It's a series. It's 6 half-hour episodes, and we're currently in talks for distribution. It'll be on public television on your local PBS station in the spring of 2025.
Nice.
And of course, on streaming too. PBS has an app for all the smart TV and iPad people. Sure. So you know, if you don't have an antenna, you can still watch it.
No rabbit. Oh, there's a nice looking truck pulling in. And you have a background in public television, right?
Yes. So prior to this, I was a producer editor on the show Motor Week. You remember?
Never heard of it.
No. With John Davis?
Yeah. What a great show. It was on the air before there was anything automotive really on the air.
You know,
the only thing car-wise you saw during when Motor Week started was maybe some races every once in a while. But there wasn't a lot going on television-wise, car-wise.
Yeah. They were one of the first big car TV shows, and they're still at it. Coming up on like 47 seasons. Or something.
Wow, that's so cool.
Yeah, so I worked there for a little while and then worked at some other shows in the public television world, but then launched this project out on my own with the goal of, you know, already having a great relationship with the public TV world. I'm
right.
Glad to stay there and work with them.
Cause, sure.
You know, this is we were talking earlier, you know, there's a lot of documentaries out there, but we really are dedicated to telling the real history of this company, of American Motors. And we think that you know, it deserves to be on something like public TV where everyone can watch it. We're not going to hide it behind a paywall.
Right.
And, you know, this is not a pop documentary. We talk to real people who worked at the real automaker, you know, everything from designers, engineers, you know, clay modelers, up to two former CEOs of the company.
Wow.
And including probably close to 24 folks who worked on the assembly line.
And, you know, so great for them because they were probably underappreciated and never thought that they would get much chance to tell their story of the interesting things that happened on the assembly line, on how the process worked, on all of that stuff. Because, you know, they're kind of the low guy on the totem pole, but they're not. They were so important to any kind of manufacturer and especially to American Motors because they had to come up with some special tools back then too, right?
Right, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, I grew up on a farm. I've worked hard before, but assembly line work is a whole different bear. Hearing these folks talk about the way it was back in the 60s and the 70s, I mean, no air conditioning, 8 hours a day, backbreaking stuff of, you know, loading 200-pound lift gates onto a hoist and then, you know, screwing them into the car and then doing 60, you know, doing 60 of those an hour or something.
Yeah.
You know,
and with nobody, and there's no on off, right? I mean, it just keeps coming.
Right. And that was one of the guys we interviewed said, you know, he started out, he was I think one of the clips I sent you, he was a Polish immigrant who was 17 years old, barely spoke English, got a job at Nash, which would later become American Motors. And he said his first job was putting on bumpers. And he's like, when's it gonna stop? When's it gonna stop? It's like, I finish a bumper, the next bumper comes, and when's it gonna, doesn't stop? You know, and he said, it was just, for a 17-year-old kid, he had no idea.
If you've ever done any kind of repetitive type job. It's very, I did some, helped my buddy do something. He was, the long story is nothing of any interest, but it was that repetitive job to doing all day long. It's like, you just zone out eventually. I think you just get into this place where you just do whatever it is. I would think that nowadays, you know, there's not as much of that, obviously, in the assembly line, because a lot of it's computerized and robots and things like that, but there still are human beings there that are doing these type of jobs. And I'm sure there are certain things that just won't work unless somebody physically
does it. Somebody has to do it. Right. Yeah. And so we're really proud that we got to include their stories, as well as, you know, we've shot over, I think, close to 50 interviews.
Wow.
So it's really cool to follow a car from the design sketch of the person who said, you know, and the stylist who said, well, it was my job to sketch out the design for the 65s.
Right.
All the way down to the people who worked on the engines and designed, you know, did the engineering, to the folks who assembled them at the plant, to the folks who sold them for a living.
Right. So all of that's important.
Yes. All these people played a huge role in, you know, people think of AMC as a small automaker. They, you know, they always preface it little AMC, but you know, over the course of 30 years, they built 12 million vehicles.
I mean, that's, you know, not nothing.
Right. That's a lot of cars.
Well, and I think that a lot of people don't realize that Jeep was a part of that. And there was a lot more moving parts to it than people realized, from back in the day. But, you know, you can only imagine that those guys, of course, the nice thing about back in the day is the guys that worked on these assembly lines made a really good living, relatively speaking, because they had the union that helped them with their wages and their time off and their benefits and all that. And a lot of them, the husband worked and the wife stayed home and the kids, they put the kids through college and they took two vacations a year. And all of that happened from the guy working just on the assembly line. So, you know, hats off to them to be able to do that.
Right. It's, you know, for people who were local to that, AMC's biggest factory was actually not in Detroit. It was in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And to a lot of those folks from Kenosha, I mean, it was a life changer.
Sure.
Being able to work there. And that's one thing we're really proud to include in the series, is it's not just model years and engine sizes. There's real people there. Mm-hmm. It's a real people story.
I think that's as important with what you're doing as with what we do here, is that part of it is the story of the car and the history of it, not just what size is the engine, what's the rear end, what's this, but the real backstory on the car. Because every one of these cars has a story. Every car in the parking lot has some kind of story. It may not be very terribly fascinating at any given time, but there's a lot to be said about cars, because cars are such an important part of our life.
Oh,
the American
yeah.
way. I mean, if you think about that, my gosh.
Yeah.
Everything that you did in your life revolved around a car.
Right. You had to get in a car to get here. You had to get in a car. You know, you were probably brought home from the hospital in a car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's one of the fun things I love, is that when people see clips from my work, or, you know, clips from our documentary that I'm working on, instantly the memories come flooding back. Oh, I grew up riding in the back seat of a Rambler, or, oh, my first car was a Gremlin,
right.
Or, you know, oh, well, my dad had a Jeep and we used to go hunting and fishing. And so that's what I love that. I love sure. hearing people tell me about their, you know, oh, well, we had one of those mm-hmm. and I remember this and that. And it's so much fun.
Well, that's what happens when people come in here and they realize that, oh my God, there's so many memories here. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Joe Ligo, the producer of the last independent automaker, American Motors Corporation, in just a couple minutes.
No matter what you think is a classic car, you'll probably find one at Classic Auto Mall. How about a two-owner 2003 Chevrolet Corvette Coupe with 5,105 actual miles? Like trucks? Maybe a 66 Chevrolet C10 Stepside with a 350 V8 and a TCI 700R4 automatic transmission, or a 1984 Chevy C10 short bed, chopped, shaved, louvered, and a nearly new 355 V8. How about true classics like a 1926 Pontiac Series 627-665. It's the first year Pontiac with multiple AACA awards. And let's not forget Mustangs, like a 67 hardtop, three owners, and a fully known history, or a 1998 Mustang Cobra convertible with 38,209 actual miles, one of just 343 built. So whatever floats your boat or opens your garage, with over 1,000 constantly changing vehicles, you'll probably find it at ClassicAutoMall.com.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than six decades. For more information, or to receive a quote,
Contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/awr. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/awr. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
When it comes to car magazines, are you tired of reading about mega-dollar collector cars you can't afford, or endless reporting on auctions and how-to tech stories that don't interest you? Then Crankshaft is the car magazine for you. Crankshaft is a 144-page softcover quarterly filled with all sorts of fascinating stories, the type of car features you won't find anywhere else. It features American and foreign cars, pre- and post-war era cars of distinction including sports cars, muscle cars, and regular family sedans too. To discover what many car enthusiasts are saying is the best car magazine ever published, you can purchase either a single copy for $12.95 plus $3 postage, or a one-year subscription, four issues, for $59.95. To order your copy, go to www.crankshaftmagazine.com. That's www.crankshaftmagazine.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Oh, you know what's coming up this weekend? The Philly Concours down in Philadelphia. Oh. Yeah. So you get a chance, go check that out. That's happening. If you're listening on America's Web Radio
or on WWDB in Philadelphia,
then you'll know that that's tomorrow, June the 23rd. And we're joined in the studio with Joe Ligo, the last independent automaker. I love the name. Where did the name come from?
Yeah, so, you know, car guys, most car folks will know that to tell the difference between the smaller automakers and the big three, the automotive press sometime in the 30s or 40s developed the term independent automaker, which just meant anyone that wasn't GM, Ford, or Chrysler, or a big conglomerate. And so, you know, that includes Hudson, Packard, Nash, you know, Studebaker, those kind of companies. And so AMC was technically the last independent automaker because they were the last non-big three automaker that, you know, survived all the way until 1987. And of course, there's semantics there. People say, oh, what about International Harvester? What about Brooklyn, right. DeLorean? So, you know, but we're going by generally what the automotive press called independent automakers. Right. And of course, now you could say Rivian and Tesla and Lucid are this whole new generation of
100%
independent automakers. But AMC really was, I mean, after AMC was bought by Chrysler in 1987, there were three U.S. automakers left. That was it.
Was there ever a thought that orphan would come into the title of it? Because that's somehow that we call cars that are no longer with us orphan cars, whether it be Pontiac or...
Right, yeah. You could totally describe AMCs as orphan cars or an orphan automaker, sure. But there's something about, I think, independent is when you look at the company and the type of people who work there, there is certainly this spirit of doing things differently.
Right.
You know, the one CEO, Roy Chapin, called it their philosophy of difference.
Yeah, I love that. So when you do a documentary, it's like creating a logo. How do you figure out when you're done? How do you like let it go and go, okay, I'm not going to touch another part of it?
Yeah, it's hard because there's inevitably you have to leave something out, you know, and so it's been tough. I think it's one of those things you kind of know, you can feel the story has like a rhythm to it and you're like, okay, you know, we're going to stop it here.
Right.
It works. It's almost like a, you know, I've never done stand-up comedy, but you know, they always talk about, you know, leave them wanting just a little bit more.
Sure.
A little bit
sure.
of the same thing. But we cover, our goal is to cover basically the story of AMC from 1954, from its creation through the merger of two other companies in 1954 till it was bought out by Chrysler in 87. And so we had a little bit of context both at the beginning and end. You know, we talk about some post-World War II developments in the industry, and then we kind of talk about the after effects of AMC into the 90s because Chrysler continued to sell AMC products.
The
well,
Eagle. Yeah.
Right. They sold the Eagle and then they sold, you know, the Jeep Cherokee XJ, the ZJ, they sold those well into the 90s and even the early 2000s.
Sure.
And so, you know, you see the Jeep 4-liter inline six, that's an AMC
that's
motor.
Right.
That is the stuff of legends, you know, carries on well after the company disappeared.
Yeah. And Jeeps are, you know, if you look at them today, they are just so ubiquitous with they're just everywhere. Jeeps of all types, not just the Wrangler or the CJ or the ones that we all grew up or the Grand Wagoneer, which is still still on my list of things I need to own for whatever reason. And you know, they're really part of the fabric of our society. A Jeep is as important to the automotive history of the United States as the Volkswagen Beetle, which is funny because it was made in Germany, or right. the Ford Model T, or any of those cars. The Jeep stands in that same category.
Yeah, and that's one thing we talk about in the series is that in 1969, AMC bought Jeep, which was part of Kaiser Industries and was kind of this low volume, not really profitable automaker run by a bunch of people that didn't really want to run a car maker. And, right. you know, and AMC turned it from a, you know, a, what I forget the exact number, you know, a 70,000, right. you know, units a year to 200,000 units a year type well, thing. And of huge. Course now Chrysler, I have no idea, you know, Stellantis, I have no idea how many Jeeps they sell now. It's probably in the millions.
Oh yeah, it has to be, you know, and of course at the time, When AMC was the merger of Nash Kelvinator and Hudson Motor Car, it was the largest corporate merger of its time.
Right.
That's a big deal.
It's not a small company.
right.
I mean, 30,000 people.
You have to keep fighting for that, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, and it's hard because, you know, General Motors is the biggest, at the time, the biggest company in the world right. of any type of company. and so it makes AMC look small. But I mean, 30,000 employees, you yeah. know, thousands of dealers and, you know, the staff and stuff. So it is not a small company.
No. Well, and the buy of the century, we all have figured out, of course, in hindsight, everybody can figure this out, a Jeep for $75 million in 1969-70 when they bought that. You know, sounds like a bargain today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a steal, but at the time, it was not guaranteed. AMC really figured out, one of my co-producer, Pat Foster, he's a great automotive writer, historian, has written about Jeep and stuff for years. He said, it's really funny. You look at the brochures from the 60s and all the Jeeps are, they're plowing snow, they're towing broken down cars, they're at construction sites. And then you look at the brochures from the 70s, they're at the beach, they're going surfing, they're going
the
fishing.
Girl.
Yeah, they got the beautiful girl and, you know, they're in a CJ driving down the beach. And he said, you know, that's the big image change is that Jeep goes from being a work vehicle to mm-hmm. a play vehicle and sales just go whoop.
Yeah, you know? Well, SUVs in general and pickup trucks. I mean, people drive pickup trucks as, you know, never take them off the road. And, right. and, you know, and that was, I mean, trucks were bought back in the day to be built and used and used up. And
right.
so when they bought, Jeep at the time, was there thought about, I mean, there was a Jeep pickup truck, but was there ever a thought of going into the pickup truck proper category or did they never want to go down that path?
It's a tricky thing. Cause right. You point out a really good thing is that at the beginning of the 70s, truck sales really started to expand
right.
and there was some jockeying there with Ford and, you know, Ford and Chevy were, you know, 2-1 and 2, but I think it was this thing where the Jeep J series trucks were based off of the Wagoneer.
Right.
And the Wagoneer sold so well that they were like, well, the trucks are just kind of an afterthought. We just have them so we can say we have them. But I think my guess is that capacity at Toledo, they were always, the Toledo Jeep plant was always at capacity.
Right, always.
And so it's like, well, why retool if we're already selling as many as we could build? But it, you do see in the 80s with the Jeep Comanche, the MJ mm-hmm. Compact pickup, you
right.
do see Jeep starting to realize, oh, there's more to the truck market here. We need a bigger
right.
slice of this. We can't, you know, yes, we're the best-selling SUV in the country, but we really should have a slice of the truck market too. But yeah, it's a shame. Those J series trucks are really cool, but they were never huge sellers.
No, they never were, and you don't see many of them. And when you do,
oh.
it's really great to see one, especially one that's been completely restored. And I just saw one recently at an auction somewhere, and it was eye candy. I really,
oh,
I
yeah.
wanted that thing.
The sticker
the honcho.
Packages. Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm curious how many, you know, do you folks get a lot of Jeeps through here, and which ones do you tend to see in the collector world? Because most of the J series mm-hmm. trucks are a little used up.
Yeah,
you know,
mostly the CJs is what we see. Every once in a while, a Grand Wagoneer will work its way through here. The beauty of our business is being in the consignment business is that we never know what's going to show up next. I mean, we literally send paperwork to thousands of people every year, and we tell them, you know, bring your car whenever we're open, fill out your paperwork ahead of time, and just bring us. We forget about stuff, and
yeah.
a guy will have called us about a Pantera or a, you know, something that, or a Jeep 91, you know, the last year of the Grand Cherokee at 91, which is by the way, there's a mistake in that. Everybody thinks that there was only 1,400 of the 91 Jeep Grand Wagoneers built, and that's not true. There were quite a few more. Mm. And I just learned that the other day. It's something that I didn't know. So, but yeah, the CJ is mostly what we get in here. And then, of course, we get some AMXs and different things that, you know, the performance side of AMC, which a lot of people have overlooked.
Yeah, it's a catch 22. You know, I just came back from a big AMC show down in Virginia, and you know, it's wonderful that AMCs are finally getting their day in the sun a little bit with the collector market, but then that also means prices are going up.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, it's like, man, we're finally getting our due, but then it's like, well, now I can't afford any of these.
Yeah. I'll finally have enough money to buy one, and yet the bar keeps getting raised.
Right.
And that's what happens in nice places you live. You know, I tell people, shut up about where you live, you know, but don't tell everybody how wonderful it is, because everybody's coming there, and then you won't be able to afford to stay there. But you know, the performance side of AMC was amazing. I mean, how do you get Mark Donahue to go into a Javelin for 70 and 71 and win the Trans Am Series Championship, which was arguably the finest racing series in the world?
Yeah, it's funny, the performance side of things, it, you know, AMC, I don't know if there's just something about that underdog spirit really captures the public's imagination. And I think it's probably one of those cases where, you know, Roger Penske maybe got a little more leeway with AMC than he would with the big three, you know,
probably
fewer rules, a little more hands off. And, you know, it's probably one of those things where AMC didn't have a lot of experience in motorsports, so they were kind of like, yeah, we'll let you do what you want, you know.
Right. Didn't know what to ask for, you know.
Right. And so, right. And, you know, and they had, I'm trying to remember the exact dates, but, you know, they had raced some with Ronnie Kaplan.
Right.
And, you know, it was okay, but they weren't winning a lot of races. And so that switch to Penske and Donahue really was like a big game changer for them.
Yeah. In 70, the 7 out of 9 races they won.
Right.
That's almost unheard of.
And, you know, the red, white, and blue cars.
Yeah.
It's just, you can't beat it. When you see these photos, or even in some of the stuff we've dug up for the documentary, we found actual film of Trans Am races to see, you know, the Mustangs and Camaros are yellow and green and black, but then you see one of these bright red, white, and blue Javelins, and you know exactly what that car is.
100% so right about that. And the great thing about it was is that it gave probably a lot of hope to people who said, oh, wow, you know, the underdog can win. And that Penske's associated with it, I mean, I don't care how much leeway they gave him, it was still a risk for him. It could have backfired on him easily.
Sure. Just financially, they didn't have the, you know, Ford could just throw money at problems until they went away.
Yeah.
AMC didn't have that kind of resources. So yeah, it's really amazing what they were able to turn those Javelins into.
And did they just come directly off the assembly line? I mean, how did that work? Do we know exactly what the process was? And
there's a great book, because I don't have it all memorized. There's a great book called, I think it's called The History of AMC Motorsports. It's by Bob McClurg. And he goes into great detail of what teams bought what, and the little knickknacks and tricks they did, you know, acid dipping bodies to remove a couple pounds, but then like the roof would cave in because, you know, it's so thin.
Right.
You know, and just little tips and tricks of, oh, well, you know, putting baffles in the oil pan because, you know, so all kinds of stuff like that. It's a, you know, motorsports, it's funny. It's the thing we remember the most, but in terms of the balance sheet, it's a little bit of a blip in AMC's history. You know, it's funny. They would sell, you know, more, I forget the exact number, but you know, they sold more Gremlins in 2 years than they would sell Javelins in an entire generation.
Exactly. And AMXs combined, probably.
Right. Yeah. They sell more Gremlins in 1 year than they sold AMXs total.
Yeah.
And so it's funny, you know, it's the, yeah, as they say, you know, we win on Sunday, sell on Monday. Guys would see a Javelin win, go into the showroom, and walk out with a Gremlin instead.
Because they go, well, I can't afford the Javelin. Because $300 difference in price back then was a huge difference. People go, well, you could, $300, it was nothing. Well, wasn't nothing back then.
Well, there's a great story. One of the guys we interviewed was a parts manager. He was, you know, a teenager, early 20s at the time, and it was 74-ish.
Right.
And he said, a bright yellow Javelin AMX, 1974 Javelin AMX, because at that point the model names were combined.
Right.
It was the top tier Javelin was the Javelin AMX. A bright yellow Javelin AMX, you know, 401, 4-speed, all the options came in. And he's wiping it down. And his boss says, oh, don't bother putting that out front. That's a special order. And he says, well, how come we never order any of these for just inventory anymore? And the boss says, we can't sell them.
Can't get rid of them.
Can't get rid of them.
Oh,
can you imagine?
No,
Now, you know, but he said it was the case that, you know, gas, the oil crisis was.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a lot of reasons why it was difficult to sell those. So when we return, you got time to stick around for another segment?
Absolutely.
We're having too much fun talking here. So we'll bring Joe back for segment three when we return to the Classic Auto Mall show.
Stock number 6065 for sale by consignment at Classic Auto Mall is a low mileage supercharged 2011 Dodge Charger SRT8 convertible. It features a potent 392 Hemi with a ProCharger P1 SC1 supercharger putting out 425 horsepower with a 5-speed automatic transmission. The convertible conversion was done by American Coach Customs in California, and the top is power actuated with a glass rear window. It has power Brembo disc brakes on all four corners with independent suspension and Bilstein shocks and struts for great performance. Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 cars for sale via consignment in our massive climate-controlled showroom in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Classic Auto Mall, a great place to buy or sell a car through consignment because it's safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Easily search for your next classic at ClassicAutoMall.com.
If you love classic cars, you're going to want to listen to the Classic Car Show with Tom Cox and Richard Lentinello on America's Web Radio. Live every Saturday at 9 a.m. Eastern at americaswebradio.com or on demand on your favorite podcast app.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday 1 to 2 only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
We're having so much fun talking to our buddy Joe Weigo, AMC documentary producer, the last independent automaker, which was AMC. So AMC has made a bunch of interesting cars over the years, but it arguably, they may have made the first muscle car.
Yeah, oh boy, you're going to start a fight here. But yes, some people, and we, you know, we do talk about this in the documentary, is the 1957 Rambler Rebel. It was a situation where they had this new 327 V8, and they had built the V8 primarily for the larger Hudson Hornet and Nash Ambassador cars, because by that point you really had to have a V8 in large cars. It was just kind of a given. But by the time the development on the engine was done, they were sort of winding down production of these cars. And this is one of these things that's lost to history. We cannot find out who convinced George Romney, who was president of the company.
Mitt Romney's dad.
Yeah. Yes. We cannot find out who convinced George Romney to put the 327 in the small-bodied Rambler. But it creates this excellent, you know, four-door sedan with, you know, manual. You could get, I think, 0 to 60 was almost around 7 seconds.
7.5 seconds, which is crazy fast back then. I mean, you're talking most cars were 12 and 14.
Right, and this is second only to a fuel-injected Corvette 0 to 60 time.
And who knew that back in the day? That was the problem.
Right, and it's a blip. It's this, you know, it's a four-door sedan. It's not really a racing car. It's not a sports car. But it's this great piece of history, and we definitely talk about it in the documentary. We have photos from Daytona Beach.
Nice.
From Speed Weeks. Color photos of the car on the beach. You know, there somebody's getting handed a trophy because it did win some awards there and stuff. So it's a really cool piece of history. But once again, it's what I think it's like 1500, 2500 built. It's super rare, really, really cool car. And, you know, right. Whether it's the first muscle car, you know, you're going to start a fight bringing that one up, but it's certainly an important part of performance history in the U.S.
Sure. Because I think it made people realize that big engine, small body and lighter weight relative term, because they were probably still pretty darn heavy. But 0 to 60 in 7.5 seconds in 57. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy fast.
Yeah. And it's a great formula, big engine, small body.
Yeah.
You know, it's,
and I would imagine the collectability of those, if you could even find one. I imagine there's not many of them left that are out there because nobody thought of them to be collectible. And that's always the problem with collectability. You say you see a car, a four-door Chevette, for example.
Right.
Not collectible at all. To see one maintained so properly and that, you know, 40 years later, here it is still on the road. road is almost as impressive as seeing a high performance one of one car out there.
Right. It's it's really interesting, right? Because the Rambler Rebel is a bit of a sleeper. It's
right.
Silver and, you know, didn't have any crazy color stuff. But then, you know, obvious stuff like the AMX, or you guys had a Rebel Machine.
Yeah, here, we just sold that. Yeah.
Which those are obviously, those are going to be collectibles. You can tell because they're fun and exciting and fast. So, but one thing I'm curious is, have you folks had a lot of Gremlins through here?
Not really. We've had a couple of them that we, and really nice ones. They're, you can find a Pacer easier than you can find a Gremlin.
Right. And Gremlins are strange because for so years they were just used car lot.
Right.
You know, cheap transportation. But now, if you're looking for one, expect to spend more than you think.
Yeah.
You know, 10,000 is not out of the question.
No.
Or more.
Or
and
more.
If it's a Levi's edition with the Levi's jeans interior.
Exactly.
And if it's a V8, you know, then you're, you know, there's some cool. AMCs are not, you know, junkers anymore.
No, they really aren't. And actually, you'll see at car shows, a Pacer or a Gremlin get fawned over by people. I mean, people are all over it. And it's funny because, you know, the interesting thing about the Pacer was, is that the doors were asymmetrical.
Yes.
The passenger side door was bigger than the driver's side door.
It made it very confusing when they tried to sell it in Europe. Because they weren't going to retool the doors.
Nobody would have thought of that until it was too late.
You're right. Yeah,
No. How many did we ship over there? Oh.
Right. But no, the Pacer is a fascinating story. I had, prior to this, you know, 10 years ago, I did a very small, low budget production on the history of just the Pacer.
Right.
And I mean, that blew up 2.5 million views on YouTube.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 10 years, so it has some momentum, but people loved that story. And that's part of what encouraged me to do this series on the whole history of AMC, because if 2.5 million people want to learn about the Pacer, well, then how much more for the full company?
Yeah.
And so it's been so great. The interviews, the folks we've met, the stories we've unearthed. And I really have to thank my co-producer, Pat Foster. You mentioned libraries at the beginning of the thing. The whole reason I got into AMCs is because when I was in high school, I found one of his books on AMC at my school library.
Oh, wow. Which is surprising, right?
Yeah, and read about it. And Pat is just fantastic. He has a collection of probably 10,000 plus photographs, documents, brochures, all this stuff. He's written, you know, probably 30 some books about different car companies, multiple on AMC and Jeep. And so he's interviewed in the film and also fantastic, just a collection. I was at his place last week scanning photos for the film. We scanned over 2,000 images.
Wow.
2,000 pictures, everything from press photos to personal photos that designers gave to him from their personal papers.
How nice is that?
To brochures, to press releases, to stockholder reports. I mean, it's really been cool to see just the pictorial history of it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, original design clays for like the Jeep Cherokee, stuff that got rejected,
right.
Stuff that, oh, well, they tweaked that and they did this.
Yeah.
So real, that's the kind of cool stuff you'll see in the documentary, is that kind of stuff that you're not going to find anywhere else.
Well, and in doing my research before having you on the show today, I was deep diving into AMC and AMXs and Jeeps and all that. And it's like, I was amazed. You tend to overlook them and not give them enough due. And then when you really start reading about them and paying attention, they were really a cool company, made some cool stuff. The AMX is arguably one of the coolest muscle cars that was ever built. And it certainly doesn't get the respect it deserves. I mean, you might find the best one in the world might be, what, 60 grand, 70 grand,
right.
80 grand maybe. And not that dollar equates to, you know, collectability or any of that. Not that that means anything, but it is somewhat of a scorecard, if you will.
Sure,
You know, you see one that sold for 80 and then you see a plain Jane something else sell for the same amount of money and you think, oh, what's the difference? Well, obviously, you know, Camaro, Mustang, and Corvette are probably the most popular collector cars that are out there for good reason. There's more of them than probably any other cars out there. If there was more AMCs or AMXs or any of those, then you'd see more of those. But they were a cool car company, especially in the 70s.
Yeah, that's the era everybody seems to remember, is Javelin, Gremlin, Pacer, you know, really some wild designs out there. And some, and you know, we talked to the one guy who was head of interiors, and he said, you know, we had fewer layers of bureaucracy. He said,
right.
We could get something approved. We could get something done. It was people all were pulling together, and you know, you didn't have all these class distinctions of, oh, well, you get to have a rug in your office and you don't because you've only been here 10 years instead of 15. He was like, we were working together, you know, making it it work, making it happen.
All for one, one for all, right? I mean, a teamwork type thing.
Yeah.
You know what's interesting, though? And then there was cool outliers of the Gremlin X with a 304 in it. That thing was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, those are really neat. And, you know, that's one of those things where on the collector market, those are worth more than you'd think.
Absolutely. And the AMC Hearst SC Ramblers, partnership with Hearst, that was very cool. 390 with 315 horsepower and 425 pound foot of torque. That's nothing. We had one here. One sold last year for like $43,000. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, the red, white, and blue cars tend to go for the most.
Yeah.
They're the ones people want.
I mean, why not? But some of the taglines that AMC had back in the day were just so cool. I went down a rabbit hole with this in the brochures and yesterday. And one of the first ones that I found was, "We made the AMX tougher this year because it's tougher this year." See, I love that. AMX, a sports car for the price of a sporty car. Because there's a difference between a sports car and a sporty car.
Right. You were getting something close to a Corvette for the price of a Mustang.
Right.
I mean, it was right. So that's what they're going for. Yeah.
How about Hornet, the little rich car?
It's funny you bring that up. AMC, especially during that era, their whole selling point was you get more features standard that other people charge extra. I mean,
air conditioning,
or even something as simple as a glove box. Like Hornet came with a glove box. It was an option on like Maverick, and people forget how much a base model was a base model.
Base model, yeah.
And
roll
right,
up windows.
You get something like, you know, you get a carpet and a glove box for free, and you know, you're really living.
Is glove box, was that just because a place to put gloves, or where did the name come from? Does anybody know?
I guess a place to put your gloves. Yeah. Now it's just where you keep the manual that you never read, you know,
or they won't fit in there. Right. How about, the 1968 model line brochure said, "Either we're charging too little or everyone else is charging too much."
That's a bold move.
Wow.
Can you imagine a car company saying that now?
No, there's no way.
So it's fascinating. All these slogans, that time, it's really a golden age from about 68 to 72.
Sure.
And the reason why is because they hired an ad firm named Wells Rich Green.
Right.
And if you ever watch Mad Men, they actually talk about Wells Rich Green.
Oh, yeah. I love Mad Men. Great show.
Mary Wells was the first female CEO of a major ad firm, and she was a rule breaker and a groundbreaker. It's fascinating. One of the folks we interviewed worked with her, and he said, you know, Mary Wells would, she just had a way to her that, you know, car advertising, except for Volkswagen, car advertising was so bland, and she broke all the rules. She's like, "We're going to do direct comparisons," which was like a outbound thing. And she's like, "We're going to put a Mustang in the ad and a Javelin next to it. We're going to tell them every reason why the Javelin's better."
Right.
And Henry Ford II was so upset that he refused to attend an event that she was at because he was so mad at her.
That she used the Ford
or
whatever.
Making the Mustang look bad.
I mean, not afraid to mention the competition is an understatement for AMC. I mean, they said the first American sports car for under $3,500 since 1957. With a Corvette and a Thunderbird next to it, a Rambler that does the quarter mile in 14.3. With this car, you could make life miserable for any GTO, Roadrunner, Cobra Jet, or Mach 1. This is my favorite. If you had to compete with GM, Ford, and Chrysler, what would you do? You know,
right there. They put it right in the tagline.
Listen, the best put together cars out of Detroit this year may come out of Wisconsin.
Yes.
Or it takes something pretty strong to make people trade in their Volkswagens.
Wow. Right. That was on a Gremlin ad. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It's all, and all the credit for that time period goes to Wells Rich Green. Their team came up with some really fantastic stuff. It's really classic advertising. It's just unlike anything the big three were doing.
I absolutely love the 78 Gremlin. If you want it any racier, paint a number on the door. Like that would somehow make something different. But, you know, I get it. I mean, how cool was that? I mean, that's a bold move back in the day. Because with a company that was maybe arguably, what, number four or five in the country, maybe you had to do a little bit outside-the-box thinking.
Right.
Love seeing that.
It definitely was, you know, they had to find a way to tap into that underdog spirit. Mm-hmm. And
Is this lead to other projects for you? Is there other things that you want to do? I mean, you probably got a laundry list of things you want to do.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean, priority one is to finish this because
right.
It's been a huge, huge undertaking. You know, six episodes, all the, I finished the script working with Pat, and it was like 38,000 words.
Wow.
So, you know, 50 interviews. So the first thing is to get this done. But yeah, I mean, automotive history, there's so much to it, especially when you tap into the people story of it. So I would love to do another project like this, or, you know, anything like that down the road. Really cool. It's so much fun talking to the people who were there, who lived through it.
Cause
you learn stuff that you didn't, it's one thing to read about it or read an article, but then to actually talk to a person who did it is really cool.
It gives it a little more credence, I think. So sometimes you hear stuff and maybe they're kind of old wives' tales or, you know, myths that have been perpetuated throughout the years. And, anyway, such a pleasure having you on the show. And it was a lot of fun and learned a lot about this. I'm a huge AMC fan now.
That's great. Thank you.
You did
so
your
much.
Work.
This has been, well, thank you. Yes. Art, a lot of the credit goes to Pat. He's been doing this for 40 years researching AMC stuff. So he's met a lot of the folks who aren't around anymore. It's because of Pat interviewing them and writing down and taking notes that we know their stories.
Sure.
So it's a huge thanks to him.
So look for this in 2025.
Yep. And the best way to follow us is just follow us on Facebook, The Last Independent Automaker. We update there on where you can watch it, when it'll be out. You know, we put out little sneak peeks of stuff.
Nice.
So, you know, that's the best way. If you want to know how can I watch it, follow us on Facebook. We'll let you know. We definitely won't keep it a secret, but keep your eyes peeled for spring of 2025.
All right. Enjoyed it. Thanks so much, Joe. I really appreciate you being on the show.
It's been a blast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Ever since the first time you saw it, perhaps even as a child, you knew you wanted one. Now, you're at a point in your life where you have the means to buy and keep one. Your significant other is even in agreement. But where and how can you find one? And trust you know as much as you can about it before the purchase. That's why there's ClassicAutoMall.com. 1,000 classic vehicles of almost every conceivable make, model, and year. All under one climate-controlled roof. You can visit and look to your heart's delight. Or do everything online from the comfort of your own home. Shipping nearly everywhere worldwide. Classic Auto Mall can make your dream come true. Visit the World Wide Web at ClassicAutoMall.com.
Since the 1960s, J.C. Taylor has been America's premier specialty insurance provider for classic cars, antique autos, modified, and custom vehicles. Our customers have trusted us to protect their prized possessions for more than six decades. For more information, or to receive a quote, contact our expert team today by calling 888-ANTIQUE. Or by visiting our website at jctaylor.com/awr. That's 888-268-4783. Or visit jctaylor.com/awr. Drive through time with peace of mind. J.C. Taylor.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the americasbroadcastnetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio. What a great guest.
Wow.
And what a fascinating story this is.
Really
I'm
is.
So excited to see this.
This reminded me a little bit of the Tucker conversation we had where one person is focused on one brand and knows everything about it. Really
It was really amazing. You know, I was ambivalent about AMC before. I mean,
yeah.
The AMXs were cool. Mm-hmm. The Javelins with the red, white, and blue, like he said, were cool. But I don't know. But the more you dive into it, it's like anything. The more you kind of peel away the layers, you start finding out really interesting things about companies or brands or cars or makes or models. And of course, the marketing that they did was fantastic. And so glad that we got to talk about that and other things. And if you get a chance, you know, check it out. You can go to our website. We'll figure out a way that we can put some kind of link on our site too.
Yeah, he has a GoFundMe page that you can actually contribute to his production.
I don't know how you get there, but I guess
we'll figure it out.
Yeah. GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Just type in GoFundMe and then type
AMC.
In the last independent. What is the name of it?
The
Last Independent Automaker.
Thank you.
God.
You know, my first new car was a 72 Firebird, and now I'm thinking, God, I wish I would have looked a little more at AMCs, because we had a dealer in town.
Probably would have got more for your money.
More for your money, as they said, and probably would have, you know, maybe, who knows? And did they last longer or better? I don't know.
I don't know about the body, they were Chevy engines and drivetrains, so, you know, you had that going for you.
Fascinating story, and can't wait to see the end result of it. I imagine it's going to be great. What little bit I've seen that they've done, the little clips that they put out are fantastic.
Yep.
And hopefully, I guess we can show some of those during this broadcast that we have. So when we're so high tech.
Yeah, we'll plug some in, or at least the links to the – he has a lot of YouTube videos, too. He's done a lot of work.
Yeah, and if you're listening on Saturday, June the 21st of 2024, then tomorrow is the Philly Concours at the Simeone. And if you get a chance, it's for a great cause, Cool Cars for Kids. One of our – we're a big sponsor of that event. Mm-hmm. And Cool Cars for Kids is a really, really – great charity that helps kids with we've talked about this with Dr. Ian Krantz last week or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Kids with really rare diseases that, you know, there's not a lot of attention. It's not, you know, lung cancer where every there's a million people that have it. It's one of five or one of 10 or one of 20 people that have it. So if you get a chance to Philly Concours tomorrow and some of the new arrivals. Well, how about this one, Steve?
Yeah.
The 87 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme Hardtop. Now, why did I pick that?
I don't know.
We put it on TikTok.
It's a big star. Big star.
It's a big, big, big star.
931,000 views. It's, you know, so ubiquitous. Is that the word? Back in the day that everybody had one? And
I don't get it, though. I mean, I do get it. They're very cool, and I always like Cutlasses. I was always a Cutlass guy.
Yeah.
From the first iteration in 1964 all the way through whenever they stop making Cutlasses. I can't figure out why this particular car got so much traction.
There's a lot of funny nicknames for Cutlasses. Some of them probably not appropriate for radio. One was a chick, like people comment on the video, Chicken Cutlass was one of them. The Gutless.
The Gutless,
But, you know, that's questionable.
Well, especially if it was a W30 back in the day. You know, that wasn't Gutless.
Not at all.
Or like my buddy, his dad worked for the Oldsmobile dealer, and he always got Cutlasses with 455s in them at 71, 72. Ooh. Just plain Cutlasses with 455s. But you didn't get, and those things would go.
Sleeper.
Oh, yeah. What a sleeper. But this thing, light chestnut metallic over camel tan, very blah colors.
Velour. Yeah.
But very recognizable. People love this car. People gravitate to this car. And if you had one, or your dad had one, or your grandparents had one, you know, here's an opportunity for you to get one. Very original example. 3.8 liter V6, the automatic transmission. The interior is like brand new.
Yeah. I think it has less than 10,000 actual miles.
Wow. So if you get a chance, check that out. Website, classicautomall.com. How about the 1971 Ford Mustang Mach 1? Like pewter metallic over black. This car is so cool looking.
Yeah, and we get a lot of these in, and they don't last very long.
They don't last very long.
They're hot right now in the market.
They are very hot. And the back window is almost flat.
Yeah, it is.
It's as flat
as you can. It's like the Charger 500.
Yeah.
Remember that when the back window was straight?
It was just literally almost straight. And apparently that's why they put louvers on those, because the heat was so intense back there.
Mm-hmm.
Same with the Pacer. You know, we were just talking about the AMC Pacer, the greenhouse effect that they had with all that glass. I mean, it was like, you know, it's like a bubble top. People thought bubble tops were cool until they rode in one in the summertime. They're like, oh my God, I'm like in a furnace.
Yeah, a lot of windows.
Yeah, a lot of windows, extra windows. So you had to watch for that. So this Mustang Mach 1, light pewter metallic over black, is probably the most iconic color for a Mach 1 that there is. It's something about that color combination that just, that's Mach 1. If you put Mach 1 in the dictionary, that would be the picture you would hope that would be there.
Good looking car.
351 Cleveland V8, Ram Air equipped, top loader 4-speed manual, got the striking fastback lines, and the Shelby 10-spoke wheels, which are really a cool addition to the car.
It really is.
So the Mach 1, I mean, what a name. Then you talk about aerodynamic type name, Mach 1, like a jet fighter jet or something.
Speed of sound.
Speed of sound. That's exactly right.
I learned that by writing up another Mach 1 this week.
36,000 Mach 1s were built in 71. Mm. And the pewter metallic, like the one here, was the one that Ford chose for their 71 Mustang sales brochure.
That's right.
So that tells you a lot about what they thought about it and what the market thought about that particular color. So, again, if you get a chance, check it out on our website. Another Ford product, a 1969 Ford Cobra two-door hardtop, royal maroon over black. R code 428, one of 3,900 built. This thing was a screamer. This thing was straight line.
Thank you. Here's a screamer for you.
This thing was like a wolf in, you talk about wolf in sheep's clothing.
It really was, yeah.
You know, this thing was.
It's so pedestrian looking. It's got, you
it
know,
is
few,
very
few little features that, are, mm-hmm. that give it away, but man, it just looks like a regular car.
I would imagine a lot of people would see that and not have any idea
right.
that it's of anything of any significance. It just looks like an old cool car from the 60s.
Yep.
You know, what would be special about that other than the 428?
Mm-hmm.
The close ratio top loader manual, R-code, 51,000 actual miles on this car.
Yep, Cobra Jet.
All in a quarter mile at a time.
That's right.
Doesn't sound like a lot until you start doing the math.
<That's it. laughs>
And then you go, oh, well, maybe that's a little more. But this one's been redone, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and very, very desirable, rare, potent. You fill in all the adjectives you want on this particular
car. Great car.
And now for something completely different. The 1952 MGTD Roadster, cream over red, 48,000 actual miles on this car, upgraded to LED lighting, which, you know, is people don't think about very often in classic car world. Some of these cars are very difficult to see at night.
And I have cars from the 90s that are tough to see. I mean, lights have come a long way.
They've come a whole long way. And not only the headlights, but the taillights
yeah.
even more so.
Yeah.
Because somebody's coming in up, you know, hot on your tail and mm-hmm. they don't see you, or it looks mm-hmm. so small that they think you're further ahead than you are.
Yeah.
The depth perception kind of gets.
That's important with a car like this because it's a tiny car.
Yeah. You get run over by this and you're going to know it.
Yeah.
This had a 1250cc inline four, rebuilt SU carbs, new top and tonneau cover, and a four-speed manual, which in 1952 was mm-hmm. kind of interesting, a four-speed manual.
Sure.
There weren't quite as many of them. Most of them were three-speed if they were manual.
Which is why so many of them became race cars. I mean, really hobby race cars.
You know who drove one on
SCCA?
Their, you know who drove one on their honeymoon?
You?
Yeah, no. JFK and Jackie.
Oh, that's right.
And Marilyn Monroe and Cary Grant drove one in the film Monkey Business.
That's right.
And Elvis has been photographed.
That is true. There is an entire website dedicated to celebrities driving their TDs. Yeah,
James Dean, Ronald Reagan was in it. I mean, he does the who's who of back in the day.
Yep.
Also, a local legend, Bob Holbert.
That's right.
Where your dad worked.
That's it.
And he also worked at AMC, too.
So. He worked. Man, he, like I said, I my dad's gone, so I can't really ask him. But he didn't hold the job down too long, because I remember Volkswagen, and what is it, a Corvette?
No,
Ferrari.
Corvette. It's a Ferrari.
I can't see on my glasses.
60 Spider,
yeah, well.
Grandpa. Bob Holbert sold and serviced MGs and one of the first kind of import-type shops in the country,
right? That's right. Absolutely.
How cool is that?
Very cool.
Yeah. So, good for Bob Holbert. How about the 1969 Chevrolet Camaro Z28, Daytona yellow over black, long-term ownership,
mm-hmm.
numbers matching 302. I think this one might be sold.
I think you're right.
Or we have a deposit
mm-hmm.
on it, maybe. Muncie M22 manual. Got a complete photo book of the restoration. And that is so important.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to restore a car, make sure that somebody documents it. Because it's nice to see if the car started out as mm-hmm. just a serial number,
mm-hmm.
or it was, a rusty this, or if it was also a nice clean body that just needed paint and interior and all that stuff. You know, there can be solid cars that need a little bit of everything except body work. And that's what you're looking for in a car like this, one that maybe had original panels and
sure.
things like that. So it's important to take photographs of the restoration.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure
this one's well documented. Mm-hmm. It sat for a long time in the consigner, and then he restored it over a number of years. I think it is sold, however.
Right. And, well, or deposits.
Yes.
And last but not least, the 67 Plymouth Barracuda Formula S Fastback. Ruby red metallic over black. Another low mileage, 45,000 actual miles, which was, you know, is not a lot of miles today. Back in the day, it was a few more than
right.
a little. You
that's
know,
right.
I mean, most cars had a shelf life of about 100,000 miles, and that was really pushing it. And the manufacturers really wanted you to only drive them for a couple of years
mm-hmm.
because they were cycling through the new designs.
Sure.
And they wanted you to, you know, oh, boy, it's time for a new car.
And
you
could
look at that one. Yeah, yeah.
And now look at the phones.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, every 6 months, there's a new phone that comes out, and every, you know, I mean, things just happen on a so much quicker basis. So this 67 Barracuda Formula S. It's got the rebuilt 273 cubic inch V8, A904 automatic, 8 3/4 inch, 391 sure grip axle. So these things, sure grip, I love that.
It's like
going to grip.
Like posi traction?
Posi traction, yeah. So, get a good grip on it.
great body lines on this car. I've always liked this fastback style of the Barracuda.
Absolutely. And last but not least, I was going to talk about, and I didn't even get to talk about last week, did you have one of those car beds when you were a kid?
Car what? Oh, beds. No, I did not.
Were you too old for that?
I wanted one. Maybe we couldn't afford it.
I couldn't afford all of the cool stuff that I wanted. I wanted all the little electric cars and the go-karts and the mini.
Yeah, exactly.
The Rupp mini bikes that sold at Sears or JCPenney or.
Do you have a car bed now?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I just sleep in one of my cars out back. Yeah,
exactly.
When I get in the doghouse.
That's right. Adult version.
Adult version of the car bed. It's an actual car. Oh, I'm getting a little lightheaded. Well, maybe you better quit riding the car. But we are so thankful to have Joe Ligo on the show.
Great.
And watch for it in 2025 on Motor Trend or on Maryland Public TV, probably to begin with, probably on YouTube and some of the other channels. I know they're going to try to get distribution of this. 6 episodes that are going to be. So if you get a chance, check it out. And we'll catch you next week on the Classic Auto Mall Show.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall Show with your host, Stuart Howden. Executive producer, Steve Saphir. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit PatTravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.